we're stepping outside traditional classroom roles to talk about a unique and powerful tool for supporting our students, one that might have fur and a tail. Pour your cup of coffee. We have very special guests to talk about how animals are making a real difference for our students. Welcome to Special Ed, IEPs, 504s, Oh My, Conversations with DCCEC. I'm your host, Meredith, and I'm joined by Courtney and Aaliyah. We are so excited. Today we have Laura Wilson, Lisa German, and Daphne, our furry friend, with us. Can you start by telling our listeners what district animal intervention is and what your role entails?
Douglas County School District has an animal assisted intervention program. We currently have 25 schools utilizing certified therapy dogs. 29 of those are staff teams, including our SRO partners. We also have volunteer teams. It's exciting to see the variety of professionals, whether mental health providers, administrative assistants, or SROs, partnering with therapy dogs in our district right now. All teams are approved and certified. They're goal-oriented, intentional, ethically driven intervention for our students and our staff. I think that's an important piece too, that primarily our dogs are working with students in the buildings, but we also support the staff working with our students, and we really like to highlight the work that they're doing in that area as well.
Yes, and I am a school social worker at Legend High School, and I support the special education population in the building, and I provide mental health services on the IEP. My first year at Legend, I found out about us having therapy dogs in the district. I immediately asked, how do I make this happen? I reached out to Laura.
If I could jump in, I love the idea that we're supporting our staff members. When you talk about special education, it's really hard for the staff, for the EAs, it can be challenging. I absolutely love that we're looking out for the mental health of the people who work with our kids, who are priceless to us.
I agree. What does a typical day or week look like for you and your animal partners?
My role in the district is behavior specialist for the behavior support team, supporting different buildings throughout the area, working alongside teams building behavior plans, supporting students that need those levels of support. Daphne partners with me in that role. Her role is turned into supporting staff when we're having difficult conversations, working through problem solving. She's been a great partner to support that process and take care of our staff. We also get to work with center-based programs, and she's visiting students in those programs. She might be part of a reward system that a student is working towards a different skill or task, and she gets to do some extra visits with them as a reward.
I have two therapy dogs that are trained and certified. I don't bring them both on the same day, but I do alternate and typically have a dog with me about 3 days each week. Their days typically look like greeting the office staff and students before school. We do hall duty during passing periods. Classroom visits, we visit with the SSN classroom and other classes by request. We do one-on-one sessions with individual students and a weekly group in the SSN classroom every Wednesday. And then I would say throughout the day, they're really good at just boosting the staff morale. They have certain offices that they know to go to maybe get a treat or two or five.
So let's connect this directly to our world. How can animal-assisted interventions be written into an IEP or a 504 plan?
Just like all of our other curriculums and interventions, we don't write them specifically into our IEPs or 504s, but they can be utilized as a tool to support goals within those plans, whether it be a reward system or working on some of those individual skills that our students are working towards. So we can look at the goals within an IEP and figure out how we can work with that animal to support building those skills.
I have a follow-up question related to that. Just thinking about from the parent perspective, if I understand it not being necessarily an educational goal, it's a tool. Access an educational goal, so that wouldn't necessarily be an IEP goal. Is it the type of thing a parent could ask for in the accommodations of their 504? Or is that not typically done? Because not every school site has them, so then you might have to switch schools if you're like, hey, one of the accommodations that I really need. Have you guys ever run into that when writing a 504 or just the accommodation section in the IEP?
Yeah, like I mentioned, we have a lot of different roles that our dogs are working alongside. And so we also have to consider, even if there is a dog in the building, they may not be connected to an individual that works within the special education department. And we look at how we can partner, but like for accommodations, the same thing, we wouldn't write a specific curriculum that we're going to be using or a specific intervention in the same way. There are staff members that can support those accommodations or those goals.
I love that. For parents, and we'll talk about this in more depth about if this is something that you're like, your head's, oh my gosh, my kid would respond to this. And not just if you have a child with special needs, but if you have a mental health or behavioral, if you know your child responds really well to animals and you feel this program might be helpful, really your first step would be to go to your school and talk to them and see, hey, does my school have this program? And since every school doesn't, sometimes if you were looking for that support, you might need to move programs or move schools, which comes with a lot of negatives. There's transitions. It's not ideal, but it is an option. There is a referral program and things like that we could talk about. Teams are, if they were like, hey, let's try and set up a one-time visit or something like that, there's some flexibility there. But if this is chiming in your head, this would help my kid so much, your first step is really to talk to your school. That's your empowerment section. That's what you can go do.
Exactly. And so moving into that, like Aaliyah was saying, many parents are listening and wondering, how can I get my child involved? So can you guys explain more what that process looks like?
Yeah, every single building that has an active animal-assisted intervention program working with a therapy dog has sent communications to their school community. And within that communication, the principal can be your contact or the specific handler of the therapy dog can be a contact. Just see how can my student maybe benefit from spending time with a therapy dog. All teams are aware that bringing in a therapy dog expands some of the work that we're going to do within a school building, because the therapy dog really is there for the entire school. And whether it, like Aaliyah said, be a one-time visit, that could really benefit the student just like having a hard day, taking an extra couple minutes of the day to spend time. But your first step could be reaching out to the principal and or handler just to see their role and how their student can access support.
If they don't have a handler, bring it up to the principal and they can make the connections with your team.
Yep.
What are some of the biggest misconceptions that parents or even the school staff have about bringing the animals into the learning environment?
Our teams, and we always prepare them for this, often hear, I wish I could bring my dog to school or a pet to school. That looks like so much fun. It is a massive perk to be able to work alongside your dog in something that you're doing every day. But we really emphasize how much work and time and preparation it takes to bring in a dog in this role. Not every dog wants this job. A big part of the training process isn't only to make sure that the dog is safe and well-behaved, but also wants to work. Our dogs are great pets at home. They also are great coworkers at work because they have their degree to do the job of a therapy dog because of their training and background. I can't disagree. It is very fun to be able to work with my dog. But one of the big misconceptions is how much time, energy, and money goes into preparing these dogs for their jobs. It's not just bringing your pet to work for fun.
So tagging onto that, the training, what does that look like? How do you go about doing that? I know my school psychologist is trying to get her dog trained. So if you can explain more what that all entails.
With Vader, I met with the trainer one-on-one for about 11 weeks. For him, it was more about fine-tuning his skills and behavior because he was 16. He's already well-behaved, but it was just fine-tuning certain things. Like, he gets super excited when people would come over, getting him super comfortable in public around crowds, which he was already pretty good at. And I attribute that to when we got him, my son was 4, so we were constantly at the park. And kids were always coming up wanting to pet him. So we trained for about 11 weeks, and we just worked on skills such as stay, wait, manners, go visit, and a lot of other commands. Once he was ready for testing, the certification process entailed him passing the Canine Good Citizen exam and then also a separate therapy dog exam. I had to read articles, watch videos, and complete assignments focused on dog behavior and body language. And then once we had that certification, we followed the district process as far as documentation, submitting paperwork, and getting final approval before he could actually work in a school.
So does the dog follow you if you change schools? And is there a process that like the school has to go to accept you having a certified therapy dog?
Yeah, so all of our dogs are certified with their specific handler. It's a partnership. We talk about them as our canine partners. And so every team has gone through that process that Lisa just described. And there's different routes people can take. Vader is an example of a dog that started out later in life. He was 6 years old when she started the process. I started with Daphne when she was 12 weeks when we rescued her. It can look different for a lot of people. We also have dogs that went through more national organizations, Canine Companions, raises and trains dogs for therapy or service work. and receive their certification that way, and then we're matched with an individual to work with them in their setting. And so there's a lot of different routes to get there. And as a district, we look at certain criteria for our approved certifications to make sure they're coming in with the right level of training to work in a school setting, because a school setting's hard. There's a lot going on. I definitely argue that schools are some of the hardest environments for therapy dogs to work because of the setting and just all the different stimuli and unexpected situations.
I was thinking about just about the dog's mental health. Is there, I assume, some type of criteria or rubric that you guys look at where you say, you know what, my dog's done today. She or he is overwhelmed, or because just like humans, I'm sure that the dogs have days when they're like, this is too much. How do you guys evaluate that? Do you look at that?
Yes, and I love that question. Like Lisa said, all of our handlers in some capacity have training around dog body language and communication, because our dogs can't say, I'm tired and I want to be done. We look at how they communicate. And the reality is, just as humans, some of our job is going to be a little stressful, but we can't get to the point of distress. So we look at each individual dog, and they all communicate differently in their bodies to tell us if they want to be here or not, whether that be a physical illness or just their mental health. We prioritize that these dogs are in a space mentally, physically, and emotionally to do the job. Their dogs can get burnt out too. And we encourage each team to determine what is their limit. What is your dog telling you in that day or in that week? For example, Daphne works every other day. That's a good balance for her, because then in between she can relax, recharge, and then be ready for the next day. And if there's a middle of the day and our dog is saying, I'm done for the day, I'm not engaging, not enjoying what I'm doing, we ask teams, bring your dog home, have somebody pick up your dog. And so that is absolutely something we focus on when we're bringing these programs in.
Now, you mentioned relaxing and recharging. What does that look like for our therapy dogs? They do work really hard in these school settings and take on a lot of different emotions from all these different kids and adults.
Sure. So with my two dogs at the end of the school day, that either one will come home and just crash. But typically what happens is we walk in the door. Say I walk in the door with Harry. Then Vader's so excited to see Harry, they end up running around and playing in the backyard. And then they come in and crash. So they do rest a lot. Same with Laura. I try to do every other day, or I'm alternating them, because it is a lot. It's like she said, there's a lot of stimuli at Legend. I don't know if you've ever been in the hallway during passing period. But I always say it's like a game of Frogger, just trying to stay alive and not get squashed.
Exactly.
Yeah, they definitely rest. Mm-hmm. They like to play and then eat and then sleep.
And all of our dogs have their individual personalities. This is the second dog I've worked with. My first one, before we went to work, we needed to release some energy. We went to the dog park for 15 minutes. He got to play, and that set him up. For Daphne, very similar to Vader and Harry, she'll go home with my other dog and just like wrestle in the backyard and crash and sleep and recharge. And I appreciate how you said that they're taking in all of the emotion. And there's so much research about how our therapy dogs work and why dogs are seen in these roles. They understand human emotion. They have empathy. They're taking in every interaction like a sponge. So we need to give them some time to release that, to do the job for as long as they can. And that's our job, to make sure we take care of those things.
There's some practical concerns. How does a district handle potential issues like a student having allergies or a fear of the dog?
Yeah, that really speaks to the procedures and policies that we have. Each team is required to have not only the dog that's ready and certified, but also preparing the school community as well. Some requirements include very proactive communications that go out when the program starts and at the beginning of each school year. One of those, in partnership with our nursing department, specific communication goes out to every family that has a listed animal allergy for their student. That goes to the nurse indicating, hey, we have this program we're looking at bringing in. Your student is identified with an allergy. We want to see what concerns you have and how we can support that process and make sure that you feel safe and comfortable. Our therapy dogs do not have a right to work in our buildings. It's a privilege. There's no legal right for them to be there. There's a legal right for all of our students and staff to feel safe. Sending out that communication helps us connect with those families and have those individual conversations. Having each handler have access to that list of students with animal allergies to know that those dogs are not going into those learning environments specific to that student. We also work with our building maintenance staff to have extra cleaning and maintenance on those rooms that the dogs are working in, and making sure our dogs have the appropriate hygiene. Our dogs are going to be cleaned a little bit more than your regular pet at home, because not all of them are hypoallergenic, and that's the reality of it, too. We want to make sure, one, that they're not shedding excessively, but also they're all trained not to lick unless there's a kiss that is wanted. And so that's one thing that our nursing department has really supported and guided us on, is the research around that. Yes, dander and hair can cause an allergic reaction, but more often than not, it's the saliva that's passed. Making sure that everyone that is interacting is washing their hands after those interactions, but all of those different layers. And if it comes to the point of it's not appropriate for the dog to be in the building, unfortunately, like, we do say the dog isn't right to work in the building, because we need to make sure the student or staff member are safe first.
I can do it from the parent perspective of who has a child in SSN or in special education who does have significant allergies. She has lots of allergies. She's allergic to the whole wide world. We've decided to let her interact with the dog at her school for several reasons. A, it's good for her. B, her allergies to dogs are not death allergies, is what I like to call them. She wouldn't go into anaphylactic shock. As a parent of a child with significant allergies, I also am in deep communication with my school. We have an EpiPen. Everyone does skin checks on my daughter just to make sure it, when she interacts with animals, washes hands and all of those things. I did wonder, and in my mom mind, I was like, the world is full of dogs. They're everywhere. I was okay with her exposure because of the huge benefit that there was. And she also takes daily allergy meds, all the things that we can do to get that benefit. But if your child has the type of allergies where you really are worrying about anaphylactic shock or breathing issues, your school should already know about that. You guys would be in big communication about that. Talk with your school, let your school know. And even if your kiddo has allergies like mine, we've just made the decision to let her have minimal exposures. We haven't had any big issues. It's been awesome.
That's so good to hear. And I think acknowledging, too, that it's not just the allergies, it's also the fear considerations. And obviously, we don't necessarily have documentation in our system that there's a student has a fear. So that next layer of communication is communication that goes out to the entire staff, as well as the whole school community. And again, it gives them the opportunity to send feedback, share your concerns. And we do have situations that come up because, unfortunately, people have had negative experiences with dogs out in the community. And we want to acknowledge that and protect those people too. And I think that comes down to some of the misconceptions that come into play with these programs. Our dogs aren't just running loose in the building, going up to whoever they want to go up to. Part of that training and certification is that you're releasing your dog to go have that interaction. In a passing period, they're not just going up and walking to whoever they want to walk up to. I think that eases some of the concern and worry a lot of the times for both fear and allergy, that these dogs aren't just running through the building.
On the fear side, as well as the huge benefit, even if your child does have a fear of dogs, dogs are in this world, you could work with your team, and I know that we don't necessarily provide therapy in school, but exposure therapy is the way to overcome fears. Therapy can be having exposure therapy to a dog in a school environment is one of the safest ways you can interact. The dog can be all the way across the cafeteria, and the kiddo who's afraid can be standing over here and just watching, hey, we're going to practice exposure therapy with our dog and get to a more functional place. In the real world, it is a detriment if you're terrified of dogs. Learning to how to exist in the world with dogs will just be beneficial in your future.
We don't specifically write it into the IEP, but I have worked with a couple of students who were not big fans of dogs. Now we've gotten to the point where they're asking, where's Vader? Where's Harry? Because they've learned that there are dogs that are well-behaved and won't jump, they won't bark, they won't scratch, and they've learned that dogs can be comforting.
A story about a student, it was an elementary school, and I won't give more specifics than that, but we had a family of a student with more significant needs and heard about the therapy dog coming into the building and reached out and said, my kid is terrified of dogs. If we're at a park, the student was nonverbal, he will run across the street. It's becoming a safety concern. Is there any way you could help us work through this? This was a dog that worked with a teacher in the building. And this teacher was wonderful, and they just started with the dog and the student writing letters to each other and starting a relationship that way. And then it was going to maybe seeing the dog outside a window walking in front of the building. And long story short, it turned into this dog sitting in this child's lap by the end of the school year and the family being able to get their own pet dog, which was one of their desires in the end. And like Lisa said, it comes down to having the opportunity to have a safe interaction with an animal and supporting it. And so that's one of those stories I always get goosebumps about, because this team just worked with this family and took the opportunity to utilize this intervention that started out as a pretty significant safety concern in the community for this student. I love that one. And we have so many examples like that.
Oh my gosh, best story ever. We're all basically crying in this room right now. That, like, chills. Thank you for sharing that. This is everything, especially from a special needs parent, where I understand those fear-based, non-functional behaviors. And to be able to have such a success like that, we're all crying. That's the coolest story ever.
Are there breed restrictions for because of the shedding and known aggression? Is that taken into consideration for the therapy pet as well?
There are no breed restrictions. That's one thing that I love about our district program. If you look at our site, we have everything from like a 7-pound Shih Tzu up to a 100-pound mixed breed. There are no breed restrictions on that. And it really does come down to, like I said, the dog is equipped, certified, wants to do the job. Those are the things that we look for.
I just wanted to share more about the breed and how there's no restrictions on the breed. And it's more about the dog's temperament. And as I said earlier, Vader was our family dog for 6 years before he started training. But like, we always knew he had such a good temperament. Once I was in a position that had therapy dogs in the district, I wanted to make it happen. He had such a positive experience. We got such positive feedback about having a therapy dog at Legend, because he is Legend's first therapy dog. I convinced my husband that we needed to get a second dog. Then along came Harry. When we went to pick Harry, the litter had chocolate and black golden doodle puppies. And in my mind, I'm like, we're getting a chocolate one. I'm going to name him Fozzie. He's going to be Legend's next therapy dog. So my husband's son and I sit in the litter of puppies. I see the chocolate one, excited. Along comes this black one, and he just bellies up, plops on my son's lap. It's like the three of us look at each other, and we eventually, I guess we're getting the black one. So that's how Harry came about, and it's just, he has the sweetest temperament, knows how to read people and their feelings.
It's a great example of how our dogs choose this job. I think so much of the time we find that people start with, my dog needs a job, and they love people, and that is such a big start to it. Of just finding that temperament, that personality that fits the mold for our canine partners. So it's exciting to hear the journeys.
I'm thrilled to hear about temperament. I think it applies to our special needs community quite a bit. Many of us who have deeply affected children think about, should I get a therapy dog for safety, for mental health, for many reasons? And I know many families who have considered this, my family included. Yeah, no, our dog is not a therapy dog. I remember our trainer told us, no, it's just going to hurt you and your dog. Now we have a lively family dog, but he is not a therapy dog. When I met a therapy dog, I had this aha moment. I was like, oh, that's what they're like. I saw exactly what the trainer saw. The temperament of the person matters, especially if you're in the special needs community and you're wanting to pair your child with a dog to be their therapy dog. The temperament, the space, the mental health of your child, are they ready to become a trainer or a companion? It's not an easy decision. For our family, it was like a Hail Mary quick fix. Hey, we're desperate. We don't know what to do. Maybe we'll get a dog. Luckily, we love him, and he's a very sweet dog. But we learned a lot along the way, and I have a deep respect for therapy dogs and all the work that goes into it, because there's so much work required from the trainer. And if you want that trainer to be your child, it's incredibly complicated.
No, and I appreciate that. It speaks to, it's not for everyone. Every intervention that we work with, we utilize within a school setting, they don't always work for every individual kid. That's why they're individual plans. And we really look at it as an option to try within our buildings. But just like we talked about with fears and allergies, this intervention is not for every student that is in our buildings. As much as it benefits the majority, it doesn't benefit the whole. And we use the term mutually beneficial. It's got to be mutually beneficial for the dog, for the individual that they're working with, and the handler. All of those things need to come into play before we know that the intervention is effective. The differences between therapy and service, as a service animals are specifically trained for an individual with a disability. So their training for therapy versus service starts similarly with basic obedience. But then they start to split where service animals are trained for specific tasks for that individual. They only are connected to that one person. Everything that's prompting the tasks that they perform is based on that individual disability. And so with therapy dogs, they're trained to work with a lot of different people to support not the handler on the other side of the leash, but the people that they're directed to engage with. And so those are some big differences. Service animals have public access rights, and they're protected under the Americans with Disabilities Act, or the ADA. For our discussion, I would direct you to our ADA department within the district to discuss what the service animal policies. There is a policy in place for the district for service animals specifically. The handler has to be in control of the animal at all times. That would be something to look into for sure, understanding the service animal policy specific to that. Under the ADA, they're protected to go wherever their person is. With therapy dogs, they don't have public access rights. For all the dogs in our district as therapy animals, they're approved to work in the specific buildings, a contract in place to work in that building. All of those pieces are in place because it's not a right. They're considered staff members. And so that's the big difference between the two. The training starts out pretty similarly, and we have some amazing trainers that have worked with our teams. There's nobody that I would say specifically to start with, but we have a great list of ones that have provided some great support for our teams. And there's a ton out there. The one thing I always encourage, a trainer that utilizes positive reinforcement, because then it's that dog choosing the work. And it's going to be way more effective if the dog is in it because they want to be and they're choosing to perform that task versus being forced to. And so there's some great trainers out there that really focus on this, that have that skill set, that background to support the training for a service animal.
I love that, because that was the big misconception, the difference between a service dog and a training dog versus. With my son specifically, he's an eloper. He will run any opportunity that he sees. He will just beeline it and book it for whatever bright idea has come into his head. Thinking about this in the long run as he grows older, as the environments may change, what is that going to look like in middle school? What is that going to look like in high school? Is this something that could benefit him better than certain devices that aren't working right now? And a therapy dog might not be the best thing. Maybe a one-on-one dog is what it's sounding like.
Animal, yeah, because you think about things your child could benefit and support on a regular daily basis and how a dog could be trained for specific tasks. Maybe it's blocking the doorway if we see the students start to walk out of it. A dog could be trained to do that. And a lot of our service animals we see throughout our schools, we have students that have diabetes. These dogs are trained to alert them if their blood sugar drops. We have students that utilize them for mobility to help with opening doors, picking things up off the ground. There's for some anxiety-related needs as well. These amazing animals are being trained to support students individually as well.
So someone with a service dog and someone else wants to bring in a therapy dog, they have to meet to make sure they get along. Is there a process for that, or is it only one animal in the building?
No, that's a great question. Like I said, service animals have the right to be there. So through the district policy, you go through that with the ADA, they have the first right to be in the building. Therapy dogs get approval, but we all make sure we're aware of each other's existence. But regardless of their role, our dogs are not to interact with other dogs while they're working. It's actually a big part of the test that a lot of our teams struggle with because it's so against all the instincts of wanting to interact with that other dog in their presence. But for both service and therapy, is in order for them to focus on their job, they need to focus on their person or a task, which is a whole other thing we could talk about that's magical. But yeah, so while they're working in areas, they are not to interact physically, keep each other and give them space. Website, they have their service animal policy posted and the whole request form on that.
I think you clarified it, just that misconception about a therapy dog coming into the school versus like the service animal. I think that's where some parents might also have misconceptions about that. Oh, who's like the dog supposed to go to? I think I was confused about that. Actually, therapy dogs were also service dogs. So thank you for clarifying that, because that was not something I was aware difference.
Questions about service animals, contact your ADA department. Questions about animal assisted interventions with therapy dogs, feel free to contact them.
I'm coming from a school that's going to be consolidating into another school. I'm not sure if the other school would have a service dog. Can there be more than one, or do they work out a schedule amongst each other so it's every other day? How does that kind of work?
Another great question. As I mentioned, I have two dogs that I alternate. I can't bring them both at the same time. However, one of our school counselors recently got a therapy dog. We communicate, but we don't necessarily say, hey, I'm bringing my dog Monday, so you bring your dog Tuesday. It's more of a, they're aware that they're in the building at the same time sometimes. Even if we're both in the building, there's plenty of students they can support, and we may go the whole day and not see each other. So it hasn't been an issue.
We have multiple buildings in our district that have multiple working dogs. I think there's even one that has two therapy dogs and a service dog. They're not interacting. They're doing their own job.
Can you have a therapy hamster? Is that another thing that could be requested if someone has like this deathly fear of a dog?
As a district, we work with therapy dogs. But in the world of eye, the number of animals that can be a good fit for this type of work is lengthy. I've met a therapy snake before. There is all of these ways that different animals can support in this type of field. And so they're out there. Just a shout out to Pet Partners. It's a national organization, and they actually do certify for other different types of animals like rabbits and cats and horses. You hear about different ones around the world. Yes.
What is the single most important thing you wish every parent and educator understood about the power of the human-animal bond in the school setting?
Love this question. Lisa, did you want to start?
Oh, gosh, this was such a hard question to answer. I had to think about it. But I would say that it's just not about comforting kids having dogs in the school, but it actually helps them regulate. When a student connects with an animal, their stress drops, they feel better, they feel safer, and their brain is more ready to learn. And it's just amazing how that connection can lead to the trust and growth in a student.
I've seen that in nursing homes. It's become a big thing now to allow the animals in because they've learned about it, how that bond really just helps with that regulation and belonging.
Yeah, and I like to think of it as if you were to put one word onto it, I like to use the word magic because there's this magic to it. And at the other end of the leash, we tend to be another body in the room, but the dog's doing all the work. The research has been incredible to show the changes in the chemicals of your brain, oxytocin, endorphins, that just by simply petting a dog releases that. And we also get to see now that it benefits the dog in the same way. They were able to do just the same tests on dogs to see that they're getting the same action within those chemicals in their brain from those interactions. We really emphasize in our schools, we want students and staff to feel safe. And sometimes the presence of the dog can really bring that sense of safety for the community.
How often are handlers and the dogs getting recertified?
Thank you for asking that question. With their certification agency, they have to be recertified every 2 years. As a district, just like our employees, we also do observations once a year of our teams. And that's going in, seeing the dogs in action, seeing what they're doing throughout their day, check in with the handler, see what the needs are. And so it's a combination of those two things. But just like all of us get recertified in our license, so do our dogs.
How long does a dog get to work at the school?
Vader is in his fourth year, the school year, and this is Harry's second year working. There isn't really a limit. It's just a matter of when is the dog ready to retire.
It is. Every year our teams go through the same implementation process. They get approved every single school year, but the length of a dog's working life is completely dependent on the dog. And like we talked about before, as long as the dog wants to be there, one of the requirements is having their veterinarian sign off on the physical health of their dog to make sure that they're physically well to be able to perform the duties of the job. So we rely on those professionals as well. And then obviously with the recertification, checking in to make sure that they're still a good fit for the job.
Since this is a parent group, I wanted to share a story of Vader supporting a parent.
Let's bring up the staff and parent connection.
Yeah, I just wanted to share a story of Vader supporting a parent in our school community. I was in an IEP meeting and Vader was with me. The parents got emotional. It was a hard meeting, right? And so Vader noticed the mother getting emotional, went under the table and he went and sat right next to her and he just looked up at her. And she looked down, grabbed his face, started petting him and said, "Why wasn't there one of these when I was in school?" It was one of those beautiful moments and me going, yes, he's doing his job kind of thing.
I love that. Can they request that the therapy dog be there? Because that's an amazing story. Because it is. It's emotionally triggering.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, again, if the person at the other end of the leash is part of that process and everyone at the table is okay with the dog being in the room, that's absolutely a support that we look at. Because
As we talk so much about, our priority is our students. But our staff and parents in the community are benefiting from these interactions as well. Just the possibilities are endless for the amazing stuff our dogs do.
I would say that most handlers, if they received that request, if they could make it happen, they would. Pretty flexible people. Yeah.
I love that. We have all sat in IEP meetings and cried. Mm-hmm. I definitely have, even when I know exactly what's going to go on. And I love my team. It's sometimes hard to see it all laid out on paper. Mm-hmm. So there you go. You can request. Just know that you're requesting the handler's time. If you're going to have an IEP that's going to run 2 or 3 hours, maybe they just show up for a little bit. It might even cleanse the room with the animals. That story, it makes me happy. It reinforces again, we're all on the same team working towards helping our kids access their education. And if all of our team members are happier and healthier, it helps us all. That makes my heart happy.
Do you have any stories about staff being incredibly touched by these animals? Please tell.
Yes.
One day this year, I had an administrator come to my office. He was very stressed out, started venting. And then Harry was present as well. Probably about halfway through the story, I saw Harry get up. He walked over, laid down at his feet, and rested his head right on the administrator's foot. And I just continued listening. And I was like, Harry's providing you support right now. And he's like, I know. And now I can't get up. I don't want to leave. And he just started petting him and feeling a little less stressed after that encounter.
Who do you think requires more support in school than therapy dogs? The staff or the students at times?
It's probably 50-50 for sure.
This is my 10th year doing this, and I would argue 50-50. Without any formal data. Historically, just to shout out the growth a little bit, when I started in the district, there were 3 formalized programs. We now have 25 schools utilizing it because the data is showing that this is creating some amazing positive impact in our school buildings. All of our teams are required to do is collect data throughout the year. Shout out to Lisa. She always gives the absolute best data to support the amazing work they're doing in their buildings.
I love when I first met Daphne, you were so quick to point out the QR code and what that meant. I'm like, oh, what is this? And you walked me through it step by step, how when anyone interacts with her, how quick and easy it is to scan this and talk about what happened, how the interaction went. Was it good, positive, any helpful comment? So I love that it's just attached to her, and our district can look at it as things to do, things to reward her, which hopefully they do, because girlfriend deserves all the praise right now.
That's so nice of you. And that's a shout out to our teams funding these programs, all the training and certification that they come in with. Just like our own degrees, they're funded through that. And our mental health department is working really hard on the financial side. Advocacy to support is great because we're seeing the difference. And our dogs obviously are rewarded with some of their favorite things, whether that be like treats and toys. All these teams we've discussed have done this on their own as individuals because they're passionate about it and want to bring it into their buildings.
Now, when you talk about treats, you know we have some passionate parents that are listening to this. Are they able to donate or send loving items to their favorite therapy dogs?
I would
dogs?
Reach out to those individual handlers and see what favorites are, and they would probably gladly accept those. I think one thing we can really shout out our whole district to is that they're supporting this. I have contacts in a lot of other districts in our area that do not feel like they want to take the risk of bringing these programs into their buildings and have just given a flat out, nope, we're not going to do a therapy dog program in our district. And ours has been so incredibly supportive in all the ways, and especially with our working within our mental health department that formally oversees the programs. Stephanie Crawford and Ellen Kirkhoff are the ones that really support us and advocate for our teams in so many different ways. And to give a full picture, a little bit more of that, they're required to have their certification, which, and training to go into that. The vet records, which typically are just part of having a dog. All teams are required to have their own professional liability insurance that also covers the canine and the professional role. And so all of those things add up to make sure we're protecting the program. It's amazing the number of people that are wanting to put that much into
it. Just even your, like, dog grooming bills are probably more. You guys are washing your dogs that much more. Staff who are pouring so much of their personal money back into our children, which, again, there's so much sacrifice on the side of people in education, which is amazing. I wish we could pay you guys $1 million, but I definitely want to highlight how much this is a love. This is a love project that you're spending so much of your personal money, of your salary, to be able to serve our students, which is truly awesome.
Any handler could say that we do it because we love it and our dogs love it, and so it's worth it in the end. If you Google DCSD AAI, I think our site comes up. There's a tab of all our programs and cute faces. A lot of our teams have social media for their individual dogs. Daphne, Vader, and Harry have their own Instagrams. Yeah. You can find our teams doing that as another way to connect to the community. I know I've walked into buildings and I had a student that I've never seen. Is that Daphne from Instagram? Yes. There's a beautiful, positive school connection just from that. And so we definitely want to find different ways to connect with our community in that way.
Vader and Harry's Instagram is Legendary Therapy Dog. And funny story about that. So my sister-in-law teaches in Fairfax County Schools in Virginia. And she texted me because a teacher at her school was getting a therapy dog. She was like, oh, they have an Instagram. And she's like, wait a minute. I already follow them. I was like, what? How did that happen?
Thank you so much, Laura and Lisa, for joining us today. It was a real honor to listen about these therapy animals and all that they do for the communities that they provide services for. And Daphne, it was a delight to have a furry friend in the studio with us today. Before we go, I wanted to add a final note. We received the very sad news after we had recorded this podcast. The wonderful dog we spoke about earlier in the episode passed away this evening, that being Vader. It feels especially poignant to have just shared Vader's story. Vader was truly a special animal who brought comfort and light to so many people. We dedicate this episode to Vader's memory. Our hearts are with Lisa and her family, the students at Legend, as well as Harry, who was his companion at home and at school, and for everyone that loved him. Thanks again. I'm so glad we got to hear those stories. We know that we provided several different resources throughout this podcast. We're going to provide all of those resources in our show notes, so be sure to check there, and you can find all the Instagrams for the animals that we talked about located there as well. Additionally, if you want to learn more information about DCCYAC, you can check us out on our social media as well as our webpage, dccyac.org. If you liked our podcast, please like, share, and let other parents know about us. We have several other conversations that we're planning to release, and we're very excited about them. Until next time, thanks for joining. Bye.